All right, so let's talk about proxy servers today. What the hell? I guess not.
Why does it do that?
All right, let's just ignore this. Okay, so who am I? I'm Leif Hedström. I work at Cisco, Cisco WebEx to be specific. I do a lot of stuff with proxy servers, cloud services, edge services, that sort of stuff. Been doing this Unix stuff since 1985. I'm really that old. I'm a dinosaur. I'm a committer for Apache Traffic Server, so that's one of the proxies I'm going to talk to you guys about. So I'm a little bit biased, only a skosh. I'm only a VP. I'm on the VP of Apache Traffic Server PMC. I'm an ASF member. I'm a hacker, geek, and technology addict. That's really who I am. And those are some of my Twitters and Google Plus and whatever handles. So which proxy cache should you be? You're obviously here because you care about proxies and you care about caching, right? You want to make your websites faster. Which one should you pick? If you're anything like me and most of the people that I know in this space, you're running around like this poor dog, right? The air is flapping over his eyes. You can't see what the hell is going on. You're listening to people and you're making decisions arbitrarily, right? You have no idea where you're going, and neither did I. So this is what I'm trying to solve. This is the problem I'm here to solve, at least help you solve, right? To help you understand how you're going to choose these proxy servers. And here's the problem. There's a ton of them out there. There's not a million, but probably 20 or 30 or so different proxy servers and different caching servers. Some of them are commercials, and some of them are free. Some of them only do proxy serving. Some of them do caching. Some of them do both. Very hard to decide which one you should be using here. And that's, again, what I'm here to talk to you about. So what are the sort of typical people go out and they look at the Twitters and the Facebooks and the Google Pluses and they get input from someone like Netflix or Facebook, what they are doing, right? Which is probably irrelevant to your problem. Because you're not running, well, unless you work at Facebook or Netflix, you're not running the same applications, you're not solving the same problems as they are doing. So listening to all these sort of gurus to tell you what to do and to put all your stuff in the AWS cloud or whatever it might be, right? It's not the right thing to do. You need a solution that solves your problem. And in order to do that, you need to understand your problem. You need to understand the problem that you're facing, that the thing that you're trying to solve. You need to look at the resources that you have and what options you have when it comes to software. And that's what we're here to talk about. Now, before we do that, before we go into details on how to solve your problem and what the proxy server can solve for you, I'm going to do a little bit of a crash course here in what proxy server is. This is maybe old news to all of you here. I'm going to do it anyways, just so we sort of talk about the same things. When it comes to HTTP proxy serving, there's really three ways of doing proxying. The first one is called forward proxy. A forward proxy, you basically have the browser, the user agent, cooperate with the proxy server itself, asking it to proxy the request on its behalf. This is typically used at home or in a nice corporation, you might be asked to use a forward proxy, right? And you would do that maybe to get better performance, better reliability, maybe better availability, that sort of stuff. Maybe your uplink out to the internet is limited. You want to be able to cache and reuse some of this data, right? It's sort of being a good citizen on your corporate or home network. A reverse proxy is probably what most of you are interested in being here today. In a reverse proxy, the user agent, the browser, is actually oblivious that it's talking to a proxy server. As far as they can tell, it's just talking to any web server out there. It looks the same. It should behave the same. Well, it should behave the same, and that's part of the presentation. Not all proxy servers actually do behave the same, and it's a key problem. But from the user's perspective, it doesn't know that it's using a proxy. The administrator of the proxy server is responsible for setting up the rules, the configuration for what should be cached, how long should we cache it, should we cache it. It sets up rules saying where do I go to actually find the particular data, the information, the resources that the user is asking for? And this is also called web acceleration. So if you see people using, I'm accelerating my website using Nginx, they're setting up Nginx as a reverse proxy. And the third kind of proxy is the most obnoxious one, and it's the intercepting proxy. Now, there are some valid reasons to do intercepting proxy. What it means is that the user, again, is oblivious to the fact that it's being proxied, but the sysadmin, the network admin, has set up the firewalls and the routers in a way such that all traffic is forcefully being sent in through the intercepting proxy server. This could be useful for things such as making sure that if you have a large corporation, your users don't go to websites that are apparently malicious in intent, right? There might be malware or viruses and whatnot on this website. You want to make sure that these users can't get to that content. But I also see people using intercepting proxies to make sure that you don't spend your afternoon or your whole day doing nothing but going to Twitter and Facebook, right? So people like to do that too. I would think and hope that people could actually have been more honest about it and not having to do intercepting proxy, but that's still being a legitimate use case for doing this. In the intercepting proxy, the proxy server is also allowed to do caching, of course, if you wanted to. So you could do this in a way such that you do get better performance for your users as well. And the second thing we're going to talk about is caching. And cache is king. Cache is the best way and cheapest way for you to get better page site performance, page load performance. And the reason for that is the fact that speed of light is still a limiting factor. You can't go faster than speed of light, as far as we know at least, which means the only way to get content faster to your users is to put it closer to your user. And how do you do that? Well, typically people put caches or edge services to use Akamai or Fastly or Cloudflare, whatever it might be, right, to get the content distributed out to the edges, near the users. Serving out of cache is also is computationally cheap. Whereas if you generate your content using PHP or Python and Ruby, whatever it might be, some scripting language typically, or JavaScript, right? That takes a significant amount of resources. A typical Drupal site can do in the order maybe, when I benchmarked this, it could do about 200 to 300 requests per second serving it out of PHP. And that's still enabling a number of optimizations in Drupal and PHP. I turned on APC, I turned on Drupal caching, module caching, and that sort of stuff. And it can still only do 300 requests per second out of Drupal. I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but in comparison, a cache in the same HTML can do at least 10,000 requests per second on the same hardware. Pretty significant improvement in performance, right? How many users can you actually serve out of a machine? It's also very easy to scale caches horizontally. You don't have to worry about things like database replication and availability and data migration and that sort of stuff, right? The caches are dumb. They just store the data that you tell it to store and gives it back to the user for as long as it's okay to give it out to that user, which means you can also scale this to any number. If you're going to go crazy and become Facebook, well, you're going to just put in 100 or 200 or 2,000 caches, right? And as long as your data can be cached and stored out of the caches, it's going to come out there, and it's going to come out there fast, and it's going to come out there cheap. So how do we choose the intermediary? Intermediary is a fancy name for proxy server. To me, there's three vital things. It needs to be high performance, it needs to be scalable, you need to be able to use the hardware. It needs to have the HTTP features that you ask for, right? It needs to do it correctly, and it needs to be easy to use. And those are the three things I'm going to focus the rest of the presentation for. So going back to the slide, we have this picture of all these different proxy servers, right? And I can't talk about all of these. There's like 15 or so on the slide here, 10, 15. I can't talk about all of them. I can't benchmark all of them. I also have other things to do, unfortunately, at work. So I decided to only look at the free software. So that took out a bunch of the commercial offerings, the F5s and the Zeus and those things. Those were uninteresting to me, not only because I didn't have the time, I didn't have the license to actually test any of that stuff. As an Apache member, I also decided it was only fair to only have one Apache project represented in this test. So I took out mod proxy, mod cache, only because I'm biased and it's my presentation, because I like traffic servers, so I kept traffic server. So we still have too many servers. So what else do we care about? Well, we said a cache is king, right? So which of these can actually do caching? So now we're down to only four servers, Apache Traffic Server, Squid, Nginx, and Varnish. This is manageable. I can actually benchmark and test and compare these. So this is what I'm focusing on. If I'm leaving someone's proxy server out, I apologize. But again, this is what customers use. If you go out and look at the sites today, a good chunk of the websites today are probably using one of these four servers to actually run their production systems. So what's the problem when it comes to scaling software today? If you haven't bought any servers recently, maybe not know this, but you can't buy a server with less than two CPUs today. It's impossible. And more likely, if you're going buying a real server today, you're looking at eight CPUs or eight cores, maybe even 16 cores or more, right? A significant amount of CPU power in these boxes, and they're dirt cheap. So how can we use that? How can we use that efficiently? That's a key differentiator when it comes to choosing software and writing software. Turns out that NUMA is a bitch too, but I'm not going into details about that. But NUMA makes things a whole lot harder. So when you're evaluating your hardware and you're evaluating your server, if your system is using NUMA, typically say QPI buses between the NUMA nodes, performance is going to be significantly affected by that. So what do we do to solve this problem? How do we get system to scale on SMP? The classical way of doing it is multi-threading, right? You split your program into smaller pieces of execution threads, and on a modern system, you're allowed to run these execution threads in parallel. If you're only one CPU, it doesn't make any difference, but if you're two CPUs or four CPUs or eight CPUs, whatever it might be, it can actually make a significant difference, right? You can actually run some of these threads in parallel at the same time. Now, there is a problem with that. It's really fucking hard to get it right. It's hard to write multi-threaded software, especially if you have things where resources need to be shared. That's where the problem comes in, right? When your resources that need to be shared, you run into deadlocks. And I'm not going to go into significant details here either, but deadlocks is basically this, right? You have two things waiting for the same resource, or two resources, whatever it might be, and neither one is willing to give them up, so they just sit there and wait forever. They're going to sit there at this crossing, right, and no one is going to do anything, and now you have a situation where no one can go, no one can do anything, no users get their web pages. Bad thing to have. This is a hard problem. So people were sort of like, this is hard. Let's figure out something better. So they went into this thing of, this is also old school stuff, but it's event processing. And if you're familiar with Node.js and those type of applications, everyone is sort of raving about Node.js, how great it is, and it's going to revolutionize and save the world. And that's for that reason, because in an event processing system like this, there's no parallelism, there's no execution threads. Things just get processed in an event loop sequentially, or you can maybe reorder the event loop, right? But things generally don't happen at the same time, so there's no case, there's no risk of having a deadlock. This makes it easier to program, but it doesn't solve the problem, unfortunately. It's a dead end, because it still doesn't scale on SMP, right? So you need to do something else. And event processing is kind of hard, too, because you can't use any blocking APIs. If you have a library or a service or whatever it might be that's blocking, say, using a MySQL library of some sort that's blocking, you're going to block that entire CPU, that entire event processor, for the duration of that API call. And that's real bad. I mean, let's say that takes 100 milliseconds. Now you're incurring 100 millisecond latency for everyone else who's behind that event in the event loop. So where are we today with these four proxies that we talked about? The good news is that pretty much all of them are evented. They all have event loops in them. Apache Traffic Server uses event loops, Nginx does, Squid does, and Varnish kind of sort of does a little bit differently, but it does. Where it really differs is how they implement this, whereas Varnish took the choice of going all out threads. Every time you do something processing-wise, say doing a DNS lookups, whatever it might be, that could be doing a blocking call, it allocates a thread out of a thread pool, and it consumes that thread for the duration of that API or that particular processing unit. This means when you're running Varnish, you're probably running with hundreds or maybe thousands or tens of thousands of Varnish threads to be able to deal with, say, slow clients, or if you have mobile users coming in right where a particular transaction might take 500 milliseconds, you're going to need to consume that thread for 500 milliseconds. Nginx uses a multi-process model, and so does Squid now. Squid 3.x uses a multi-process. What that means is you're basically running typically one process, one Nginx or one Squid process per CPU. Each such process is an event processor, but you can now scale on SMP by adding more of these processes. Now, sharing resources across processes is more difficult than and more expensive than doing in a multi-threaded application. So Traffic Server took an approach where you basically create one thread per CPU or core, and each such thread is an event processing engine. So they're solving sort of the same problems, but they're solving them slightly different. And again, this is one of these cases where you need to look at your problem and understand which one works best for you and which one doesn't work well for you. So for this test, I decided to do everything on AWS, primarily because a lot of people who's doing these things today, they go to AWS and they're using the cloud, the public cloud offerings. There's plenty of them now. And it's a cheap way to get started and to test stuff too. I did all the tests on the internal network, the RFC 1918 network, which is basically the 10 dot whatever it is, right? And I did this to basically avoid going through the network controllers and so on and so forth that Amazon provides. Also save some money for my test. I put 8 gigs of RAM in each one of these boxes, and I did enable access logging on every box, which means it is logging every transaction to a disk, except for Varnish, but I'm going to go into details on that later. And the software versions I used the latest Ubuntu that was available to me at AWS, which was Linux 3.2.0. Traffic Server, latest version 3.3.1, Nginx 1.3.9, which I believe is the latest, Squid 3.2.5. and Varnish 303. All of these were the latest versions of the software I could find on their websites as of about a week ago. Again, I did that to sort of be fair, make sure that everyone is running the latest possible version that they have claimed to be the best. One of my goals was to do minimal configuration changes. And I think that's important because, especially if you're going to evaluate these servers, you're not going to become an expert in 4 proxy servers overnight. This takes significant skills and experience to actually tuning some of these things. So the benchmark probably aren't as optimal for any of these servers as it could be. I mean, someone who has a PhD in Varnish can go in and look at some of these configs and make some changes and maybe get out another 10% or so out of the performance. I think that's irrelevant for this test. I think, first of all, I did the same thing for all 4 of them. And second of all, most people are not going to have that experience to do that sort of benchmarking anyways. I did cache a real Drupal website that I copied out of someone else's site, set it up in a way such that it did allow for the cache to be, the caches to cache the content for some time to sort of make a real use case. So the website is actually about 24K bytes uncompressed, un-gzipped, and 8K bytes gzipped. And I think that's fairly reasonable to what you can expect out of a typical website, so meaning this test is actually intended to be sort of reasonable when it comes to what you would see in a real setup. I'm going to talk about the configs. I mentioned I wanted to do minimal configs. I'm doing this in alphabetic order, so there's no preference to Traffic Server, none at all. So for Traffic Server, I did 2 changes. I changed the add a line to remap config, and remap to config basically tells the proxy server where you should go to find the data, where can the resources be fetched from. I did a change to records.config, which is basically telling it to bind port 80 instead of the default port 8080. Those are the only 2 changes I made, nothing else. So for Nginx, I tried this first. This is sort of kind of the default config that it comes with. And it's saying the same thing, setting up a cache, It's setting up the list on a port 80, and it's saying to send all the requests down to this particular backend server, the Drupal server. And I tried this, and if you do this, if you took this config, you would 100% guarantee it'd break your site. It just doesn't work. And the reason it doesn't work is because it can't handle the vary headers. So, and what that means is basically it would serve the gzip content to both non-gzip and gzip requests. So what I did was, this is sort of my naive first attempt. Okay, well, that seems reasonable. Let's just strip out the accept encoding header before sending it to the origin, which means I'm only going to get the non-gzipped version of the document back to the proxy cache. I'm going to cache the proxy cache, the un-gzipped version in the proxy cache, and then I'm going to have Nginx do gzip. So I did this and I benchmarked it, and it was about 10 times slower doing it this way. Now, it does it right, which means it works, which is good news, but you're not 10 times slower. So typically, where it took about 5 to 7 milliseconds to fetch the page, it now takes 45 milliseconds to fetch the page. And what's worse, it can also only do about 1/5 of the number of requests per second. So where it used to be able to do about 8,000 or so, it can do 2,000 now, or 1,800. So this is a failure again, right? So I went back, and I was scratching my head even more here, and I sort of got at a loss, and I couldn't find anything on their website how to actually do this right. So I asked some friends of mine who actually do use Nginx in a real environment, and they gave me this. All right, what the fuck? So basically what you're saying now is I'm going to strip out all these headers, and I'm going to remove all these headers. I'm going to change the cache key to something where I try to parse the accept encoding header myself, and I'm going to use that information and change the cache key in a way that the server can differentiate between the gzipped version and the non-gzipped version, right? And this actually works, and it's actually pretty fast. But I think this is a failure. I think this is a case where, why the hell isn't the server doing this on its own? If you're considering being yourself a serious proxy cache, it should be doing this on its own. Because all the other servers does this automatically. All right, so squid configuration, again, pretty straightforward. So they have a disk cache, memcache. In this particular case, I set up to do two workers, which means I get two of those processes, right, that do the event processing. And the one trick here that took me a little while to figure out, and this is what I dislike with the squid configs, it's hard to find this information. In order to do reverse proxy, you need to add that keyword Excel next to the port 80. If you don't do that, it doesn't do anything. It'll give you a 501 or 502 or something like that. Yes, it doesn't work. And that took me some number of minutes to figure that out. I'm not a squid expert, so maybe this is obvious to you guys, but I didn't think it was that obvious. Now, here's the winner, though. Varnish. This is all I did for Varnish. I'm telling which server to go to, and that's it. Everything else he just figures out on his own. And that's the way it should be. This is the way systems should be configured, right? And this is actually a VCL script too. So it's actually a little scripting language that Varnish does. And it compiles this into C code and then into object code. So it's incredibly fast. So if you do more complicated stuff in here, it's still incredibly fast. Okay, so let's do some benchmarks. So I ran this benchmark again. This is 8K byte gzipped. As you can see, the top three contenders are Varnish and Traffic Server and Nginx. Not too surprising. They're ballpark doing the same, and I actually think we are getting close to where the network interface is actually becoming a bit of a bottleneck. If you're doing 10,000 8K byte bodies plus headers and whatnot, that's in the order of maybe 90 or so megabytes per second out of these boxes on the NIC, right? So pretty significant amount of data coming in and out on the box. What's more interesting to me is actually, well, first of all, Squid is by far the slowest of them all. Pretty significant difference there. But what's more interesting to me is the latency. And Nginx and Traffic Server have very similar latency characteristics here. Squid does not. So Squid is like 50% slower on each request, even though it's doing like almost half of what the other ones can do, or a third, or two-thirds, it's still much, much, much slower doing it. And if you're looking at a web page today, let's say you have that 5 millisecond difference between every request, and you're doing a page here with, say, 30 resources on a page. That's 30 times 5. That's 150 milliseconds of just raw difference in latency on that page for something as simple as picking the right proxy server for your problem. Now, one thing that I talked about before was that I enable logging on all of these. All of these do full logging on every request to the disk, except for Varnish. Varnish uses an in-memory logging mechanism, kind of a ring buffer method. So I looked around a little bit to see how do I get Varnish to actually log to disk. And there is an application called Varnish Log that comes with the application. So I did Varnish Log-W to write the log, the ring buffers, out to disk. And again, here's one of these what-the-fuck moments. What happened here? And I don't have an answer, but basic, because I did this last night, performance goes to hell. It's completely messed up, right? I don't know if they're doing, say, synchronous I/O, or maybe there's some locking contention between the shared memories or something. It's honestly not my problem to solve, but it's clearly a problem, right? And it's clearly a problem that you guys should be aware of. Because if you do want to save your logs to disk, if you do want to keep them for posterity, you're going to have to get them out of those ring buffers in one way or another. And it is going to take some of these resources. And that's important. And I haven't seen any benchmarks before that actually looked into something like that. And I think this is pretty vital information to have. Now, CPU-wise, again, Nginx and Traffic Server were pretty much the same. They used about 60-63% of the CPU. Squid used the most CPU, even though they did the fewest requests. Used about 83%, 82% CPU. And Varnish, somewhere in between 73%. So a little bit better, but not as good as Nginx. Nginx was the best. And of course, Varnish, again, when you enable the log writing, it goes again up and consumes a ton of CPU. So again, something to be aware of. So, like I said, this is probably getting to the point where the AWS NIC is getting saturated. So I decided to do one more test, and I took a small 500-byte JPEG and ran the same test. It's still cacheable. All the caches can still store this in disk and on memory. And I ran the same exact same benchmark again. So you can see now the difference in throughput is a little bit more noticeable. Traffic Server is now pretty noticeably the best with about 15,000 requests per second, whereas Nginx came in and Varnish came in the same at about 11,000 or so. Pretty noticeable. Latency-wise, it's now again more noticeable again, where Traffic Server came in just below 5 milliseconds, Nginx at 6. Varnish at 7, and of course, Varnish goes down the shitter again with the Varnish log running, but again, something to keep in mind. Squid, again, slowest and the fewest requests per second. CPU-wise, it gets interesting. I think this is to the point where AWS, the virtual host that I have, it's again saturating actually on the CPU. I couldn't get any of the boxes actually to consume more than 82-83% of the CPU. Probably something in the virtualization, I would be my guess, but you can see at this point in the test, we're no longer NIC bound, we're no longer network bound, so the CPU is becoming the bottleneck. So, obviously, performance matters, but it's not really the key differentiator anymore. If you look at the top three, Varnish and Nginx and Traffic Server, they all ballpark the same request per second, right? It's all ballpark the same latency. If you're picking your proxy based on performance numbers because someone put up a benchmark, you're not doing it right. What you should be looking at, in my opinion, once you've gone past that, you pick the one that sort of looks the same performance-wise. And there could be other reasons why you're picking something based on performance, but really what you should be looking at is HTTP, right? You're serving a website, you're using a protocol, defined in RFC 2616, and it's not optional. 2616 is there for a reason, right? They came up with this protocol specification so that people should follow it. And you have to understand what you need to do to get that to work. I mean, I showed you the example before to get the configuration for Nginx to do it right. Well, what does it mean? What happened? Well, here's what happened. So I ran the test, right? This is using curl, and I'm sending the --- compression option to it. And what that tells you basically sends an accept encoding gzip comma deflate, telling the server that I can accept compressed data. Well, that's great. So the Nginx comes back. If you look at the bottom, it says Content encoding gzip. Awesome, you did the right thing. Nginx rocks. Well, let's send another request. So I took out the dash dash compress. So I'm telling the server I cannot support gzip, right? So what does Nginx do? Well, it takes your request, looks at it, and says, fuck you, I'm giving you a gzip anyways. This is an epic fail. This is a violation to the protocol, right? Now, this probably works, and I can guarantee if you go out and look at some Nginx sites out there, I bet that they are actually doing this, and they get away with it because most browsers today support gzip compression. But you still can't just violate the protocol like this, right? This is bad. So we talked about a proxy service as well, and I mentioned there were three types of proxy servers. If you want something other than a reverse proxy, these are the only two choices of those four that I picked. Now, ModProxy, ModCache can do reverse proxy, can do the other proxies too, but Nginx and Varnish cannot do, say, forward proxy or intercepting proxy. So if you're looking to use a proxy for your corporation or for your firewall, whatever it might be, these are probably your best options. Makes it easy to pick, right? So the other thing that I did was, there's a really great suite of tests developed by a bunch of smart guys, rocket scientists at the measurement factory. It's an application suite called the CoAdvisor. And they were graceful enough to give me access to this system for free. It's normally a commercial application, but I got it for free. And I ran all the tests. There's 672 tests. And each test does a number of different things to sort of basically try to rape the proxy server. What can it do to fuck it up? And of all these tests, Squid was by far, and I mean by far, the best. It had a success ratio of 81%, which is pretty darn remarkable. And Traffic Server came in a good second at 68%, which means it passed 68% of the test. Varnish and Nginx, somewhere around 50%, about the same. What's even more interesting is to look at the, if you don't succeed in a co-advisor test, you can either fail or you can violate the protocol. Failing means that you basically, something went wrong, you couldn't handle it, the system can't decide, co-advisor can't decide if you actually violated the protocol or not. He just knows that it didn't succeed. But so a failure is bad, but it's not necessarily traumatic. Violations are traumatic, like I showed you before, right? When Nginx fucks you up. That's bad, and you look at these numbers. So Squid, again, is by far the best, 6%. Only 6% of the test cases were violations of the protocol. That's really, really good. Traffic Server came in a good second, but still far behind Squid at 15%. Varnish came in third at 25%, and Nginx was by far the worst, 27%. That's almost a third of all the test cases that they have come up with to the protocol. Almost a third of those test cases, Nginx gets it wrong. It violates the protocol. How are we doing on time? Have tons of time?
Oh, yeah.
All right, good. All right, because here comes my favorite portion. This is where I get to be subjective. So how do we pick and choose this? I mean, it comes down to ease of use and extensibility, right? And these are my subjective opinions. So I made basically the good and the bad and the ugly for all four of these servers. And these are my opinions. I try to be somewhat objective when I can, but it's hard, right? A lot of this stuff is how I feel about this software. I'm slightly biased toward Apache Traffic Server since I wrote it, and or portions of it. And take this with a grain of salt. If you just listen to me, you're doing it wrong again, right? Go talk to someone else. Go talk to Theo. He knows everything about proxy servers. I still think it's important. So I'm going to just go through these. So what's good with Traffic Server? Well, it does support HTTP fairly well. It is a good proxy server. It supports HTTP 1.1. It does support SSL. It tries to tune itself to the system as best as it can. If you looked at the config, I really didn't do anything with the number of threads or the memory or anything like that. It tries to figure that out on its own. He has an excellent cache. Of all the caches that I tested, Traffic Server has by far the best cache, in my opinion. By far. It's the most performance-wise one. It's the best. Resilience-wise, it's the best. You can take a cache. If you have a box with 24 disk drives in it, you can walk up to a Traffic Server cache, rip out the drive, and it will click for a little bit. You can configure how many times it should click. But after, say, 10 times to read that disk, and it fails, it will just remove that portion of the cache out of the cache. The other 23 drives just continues to work. And what's even more interesting, you can take that drive, the one you just pulled out, put it in another box, and it will work as a cache there. Each disk drive is actually its own little cache, self-sustained, has everything that it needs to know about itself. And it's done on the raw device. There's no file system. There's no OS overhead, anything like that. Excellent cache. It's very good plugin APIs. And there's quite a few plugins coming in. We have some good ones for stale while, revalidate, serving stale content out of cache. We have a speedy plugin that's sort of still in its infancy, but it's coming up and we're working on that. A lot of other good plugins. An ESI plugin you can do, Edge Side Include as a plugin for Traffic Server. And it's used by some of the biggest, used and developed by some of the largest web companies in the world. If you look at LinkedIn, they're using Traffic Server. You go talk to Comcast, they're using Traffic Server. You go talk to Yahoo, they use Traffic Server. Traffic Server doesn't show up on the sort of 10% of the world is using Traffic Server, but it's irrelevant, right? If you look at some of the biggest sites, they're actually using this software, and they develop this software, and they provide patches for this software, and that's important. So what's bad with Traffic Server? The load balancing is a freaking joke. We need to fix that. And Theo promised he was going to fix that for us. So thanks to OmniTI for that. It's seen as difficult to set up. And yes, it can be. But if you looked at the slide that I just showed in the beginning, it tries to do most of it on its own, right? The problem people have is they go in and they look at they do a make install, or they install the package, and they go look in the config directory, and it's like an explosion, right? There's 20 or 30 config files, and you scratch your head, and it's like, oh my God, this blows. How am I going to figure this out? Well, the good news is you don't need to figure it out, right? It does it for you with a few caveats. You need to figure out how to do the mapping rules. You need to tell it where to use the disk drives, right? So there's a few files you need to configure. We could get better, though, and we know about it, and we will fix it, but it is somewhat difficult. The developer community is too small. There's not a whole lot of activity. There's maybe 10 or so really active people and 20 or so moderately active people. Not as big as, say, Varnish or Nginx, which is a much wider community. And the code is complicated. Remember, I showed that picture. Multithreading is hard. Yeah, it's complicated. Like I said, there are too many configurations files. We need to get rid of that. That's bad. There's a lot of legacy code in there that we don't need, and it should be removed. It just sort of obfuscates the code and makes it unnecessarily difficult to understand. There's also not a whole lot of commercial support. Being an Apache project, it's all driven by community, and Apache is all about community before code, right? What matters to Apache is sort of a meritocracy where people come in and do what they want, and then they can go away. And expecting the community to fix your problems is unreasonable. And that's why it's important to have commercial support. And there's not a whole lot of commercial support right now for Apache Traffic Server. A couple of months ago, OmniTI announced that they're doing a package support for Traffic Server. So that's a good thing. If you're looking for support, you can go talk to them. But hopefully this is an area where we can get better. We can get more companies, more consulting companies to actually do this. Nginx, so what's good with Nginx? Well, the code base is actually surprisingly easy to understand. If you look at the code, it's actually pretty straightforward. It's easy. It doesn't have a whole lot of locking problems and that sort of stuff. It's an awesome web server. I talked to a good friend of mine, Rasmus, and he said the way he runs his PHP sites is basically Nginx and FPM and PHP, right? Very nice stack like that. And there's commercial support from the people who wrote it. The guys who did this in Russia originally started a startup called Nginx. I think it's just Nginx, Nginx.com. And they provide support for their products obviously for a fee, but this is great. Like if you're betting your company on a product, open source product, you can go buy support from them. I think that's huge. So what's bad with NGINX? I think from my perspective, whenever I knew adding an extension or changing an extension, I had to rebuild the binary. I think that's obnoxious. By far the most configurations required to get something to work even remotely correct. This is an atrocity, right? It's just wrong. It doesn't make any attempts to tune itself to the system. Why can't it figure out that the best way would be to start up one process per core? Seems like a no-brainer to me, but it doesn't make any sort of attempts to do that. It doesn't have good support for conditional requests if you're doing things like dynamic content where you need to make sure that if it changes on the server, you need to invalidate the cache. You can send things such as if modified since as part of the request and ask the origin, has this object changed or not? NGINX doesn't support that at all. So what's ugly? The cache. The cache is a freaking joke. It really is. I mean, they're basically saving one file on the file system per resource. And that's fine if you have 1,000, maybe 10,000 resources. That's fine, right? But what if you have 1 billion? You're not going to store 1 billion files on a file system and hope to get away with that. It's just not going to work. It's also sort of expecting the kernel to do things right here, in that it doesn't try to do any RAM caching. It just assumes that the OS is going to do some caching of the files, inode caching, buffer caching, and that sort of stuff, right? So they're just betting the horse on the fact that the OS might do some intelligence here, but it might not. Obviously, the protocol support is abysmally poor. It's the worst in all the tests. So, I mean, I guess I can say there's nothing worse than NGINX. But that seems unfair, but it really is the truth. I scratched my head when I found this, and I was like, how is this possible? So I went to the documentation, and it says, NGINX does not handle vary headers when caching. That's from the documentation itself. So it's a documented misfeature. All right, so Squid, what's good with Squid? Obviously, it's the best HTTP proxy there is today, right? If you looked at some of the tests, the conformance tests, the protocol tests, it scores the best by far. All these features, it has a ton of features. I mean, it's ESI and HTTP and ICP and pretty much anything you can imagine when it comes to HTTP caching protocols. You can almost be certain that Squid has it. And it's been around it's not like I came up with this yesterday, right? This has been around forever. These features have been around there since the protocols were invented. So that's a good thing. And it works pretty well out of the box. I think the configs could maybe be a little better, but generally it works pretty well out of the box. Now the code base is old. If you're using Squid 2.x, that's ancient code. I mean, that's older than me. I don't know if that's possible, but it's way, way old code, right? They rewrote all of that for 3.x, but it's still sort of an old architecture, old code base. The cache is not particularly efficient. So a good example is, when Squid caches something on disk, it needs to keep some information in memory so you can actually find and update the data onto disk. For an object on cache in Squid, it takes about 60 bytes of RAM in memory. The same number for traffic server is 10 bytes. So it will consume about 5 times as much memory just to manage the disk cache compared to some of the competitors. Typically, when people used it in the past, it was sort of keeling over. It couldn't handle massive loads. You got above a certain number of clients or requests. It would just sort of keel over and not handle it properly. I think the configurations for Squid are very complex. I find them to be much more difficult than any of the other ones. Certainly, it's a whole lot more difficult than Varnish. And I think I honestly think the only one that can sort of compete with complexity would be NGINX. When it comes to configuring this. So SMP is definitely an afterthought here. When they rewrote Squid 3.x, they had the opportunity to actually fix what was wrong with it, right? Because they did this maybe 6-7 years ago. SMP was there. They knew about it. So they spent all these years, I don't know how many years it took, but a significant amount of time and resources to rewrite the software, and they didn't fix any of the problems. I mean, the code looks great. Much, much nicer to look at, but it doesn't solve any of the problems. So why did they even bother, right? And it kind of feels like they missed the boat here a little bit. It's also not very extensible. The way to do extensions and plugins for Squid is basically create external applications in Python or Perl or C, whatever you want to write it in, and then they have sort of an FCGI-like API between the process itself and these little helper apps. It seems very primitive to me, not particularly efficient. So Varnish, what's good with Varnish? VCL. VCL is Varnish configuration language. What else is good? Yeah, VCL. VCL is pure genius, right? It's freaking awesome. VCL alone is probably what drives a lot of people to actually use Varnish today, I think. And with VCL, you can do almost anything, and it's just magic, and it compiles it into C and then to a .so and loads it in as a, sort of like a plugin. And it's fast, and it's flexible, and you can do a lot of stuff. It has a clever logging mechanism, like I showed you, it has problems, right? But they took the approach of, I'm not going to impose an expensive logging system on you. It's your choice to make. So the logging is actually incredibly clever and very efficient, very, very, very fast, except it doesn't do much, right? So, but that's good. I like that approach. It's sort of like you don't have to take the penalty if you don't want to. ESI is cool. A lot of people use Varnish today because it comes with ESI. If you looked at it, it has... So ESI is a long sort of definition of all sorts of directives you can do edge side including. It's basically a templatized version of HTML. You can do things such as including other documents and conditional includes and so on. Now, bear in mind that Varnish implements exactly one directive, and that's include. Everything else of the ESI specification, it doesn't include. Oh, it has comments, too. It supports comments. And ESI is not unique to Varnish, though, but it is a cool feature. More people should probably look at it. Squid has it, Traffic Server has it. I don't know if Nginx has it or not, but they probably do. Cool feature. And Varnish is supported by many commercial vendors, not only one. The guys who wrote it support it. OmniTI supports it. Other companies support it. Good support from commercial entities. I think that's great. Also, has a lot of traction. A lot of people talk about Varnish. You're looking at migrating from Squid, we'll go to Varnish. That's sort of the general consensus. So what's bad with this? Well, Varnish was designed assuming that the kernel is going to be smart about everything. Well, as it turns out, the kernel is freaking dumb. Maybe it's a BSD versus Linux. I don't use BSD myself. But it simply doesn't work that great. If you expect the kernel to mmap a 5 terabyte piece of disk, or RAM in this case, and hope that it will actually page in and out properly, it typically doesn't work all that great. If you look at some of the people who looked at this and used it for real data, real big system, a good example would be Fastly, a CDN vendor. They used Varnish and they used it successful, but they actually ended up rewriting the whole cache because it simply didn't work, at least not for their use case. Persistent caching is really an afterthought at best, where when you do this mmap and you do it the way they want it to, if you reboot the server or restart the application, you lose the cache. And why is Varnish log so slow? I have no idea, but it's really freaking slow. And Varnish 2 doesn't support conditional requests particularly well, just like Nginx. So what's ugly with Varnish? I think Varnish took a... They took an approach assuming that the kernel can handle any number of threads. And threads are inexpensive. They're fairly cheap, but they're not free. So running with 100,000 threads is still going to incur significant overhead. Varnish doesn't have any SSL, and as far as I understand, there's never going to be SSL in Varnish, which means if you do care about SSL, which I think you do, you need to come up with something else. You need to front this sucker with something else, S-Tunnel or Mod Proxy, whatever it might be, right, to do SSL. So my question, what happens with speed in HTTP2? Are you going to be able to do any of those things with Varnish? Unclear to me. I mean, you can maybe front-end some of that stuff too, but now it's not going to be as nicely integrated with the proxy server itself as you would want it to be. The protocol support is pretty weak. When I ran my test, I ran the default configs, the thing that it comes with. Now, if you go to the Varnish site, you will find hundreds of thousands of lines of VCL that you can install to solve some of these problems. You can implement some of these protocol features using VCL, But it also means that you need to have a PhD in VCL, right? You have to hack a lot of code, VCL code here, to get it to behave right. And in my opinion, that's a failure. If you claim it to be an HTTP proxy, which they don't, but if you claim it to be an HTTP proxy, you should solve their RFC 2616. So, there's a lot of failure here, right? Kind of depressing. But the good news is, I think proxy servers actually do solve a problem. You guys have to understand what the problem is. And don't listen to people on Twitter and Facebook and whatnot. I mean, sure, you can take their input, but make sure that you do your own investigation and examination of the protocol and the problems they might have. Performance is rarely the key differentiator in any of these software. The only one that sort of stands out as being worse when it comes to performance is Squid. All the other ones are pretty much in the same ballpark when it comes to throughput and latency and so on and so forth. Slight difference in the latency, more so than the throughput, but again, within reason. And in my opinion, what's important here is that you should use a proxy if you use a web server. So that's all I had for today. Thanks for having me. I don't know if you do any of the evaluations after the conference, but if you do, please fill out. If you wasted your time here, please let me know. I can take some beating. The only way to get better is to get some input from you guys. So please fill out those reviews and submit them. And thank you. So we do Q&A here, so feel free to step up to the microphone.
I'm curious, when you used Varnish Log, did you put any kind of filtering on it?
Nothing.
All right. With your other applications that you use, when you talk about logging requests, it's one line per request that you log, right?
Right.
Okay, Varnish logs everything that's going on. You could have several hundred lines in there per request because it's logging everything that happens as it's going through. Think of it as a debug log. Varnish Log is probably the wrong tool if you're trying to just simply keep track of all the requests that come in. What you're probably seeing, the latency in Varnish Log minus W, excuse me, have a little bit of the Lisa cold today. What you're probably seeing is Varnish Log hammering on the disk, or the virtual disk in the case of AWS, and that's probably what's slowing you down. Varnish Log has filtering that you can use, and there's another tool called Varnish NCSA, which attempts to produce one NCSA-like log line per request.
Great.
Right.
I appreciate that.
Sure.
Hello, Dave Regan from Peak Internet. Did you do any comparisons of those same benchmarks without the proxy in front of them, just to give a baseline?
Yeah, so the baseline going to Drupal. So doing the Drupal site without any sort of optimization on Drupal, it did about 50 requests per second. I turned on APC, the PHP opcode cache and sort of in-memory cache, and it went up to about 250 to 300 requests per second.
Okay. Thank you.
Hi, my name's Julian Dunn. There used to be commercial products in this space, like we used to use cache flows, reverse proxies for this kind of thing. It's more of a philosophical question, but why do you think there aren't, are you aware of any that are good?
Well, SUSE is pretty good. SUSE is a commercial offering that's really good. I think the market has gone to the point where the free offerings are so good that there's rarely a reason to go and purchase something, especially now with the commercial offerings also providing you basically 24/7 support for finding bugs and fixing bugs and that sort of stuff. There's rarely a reason to go for the closed source versions of proxying.
Okay, thanks.
Hi, I'm David with Cisco Systems. Question on what would be your recommendation, and I suppose this is not a simple answer, but one of the proxies that has very good security functions besides just SSL support, and I guess logging could be a part of that. Any input on that? Or direction I might take in terms of reviewing some of these proxies?
That's a great question. Security, this is a difficult area, right?
See, one of the things I might be concerned about, maybe a web application firewalling capability, and as opposed to a straight firewall, just, you know, permitting certain ports through. But, you know, we're all,
right.
We all need to be concerned about web application firewalling and
right.
So, cross-site scripting and whatnot.
All of this software supports that sort of ACL mechanisms, filtering and restrictions and that sort of stuff. There are plugins for, at least for Traffic Server, I know, to do similar things like mod security, like we'd use in Apache HTTP daemon.
I'm familiar with that.
Right.
And have used it, yes, very good.
Right, so there's a plugin for Traffic Server to do things similar to mod security. I'm sure there's similar things for Nginx. I'm not sure about Varnish, but the other thing that's interesting to me is the resilience of the software itself. How likely are you to crack the proxy itself, right? And you hear surprisingly little security alerts on in this space. I'm obviously mostly familiar with Apache Traffic Server, where there's been exactly one denial of service attack. You could crash the proxy server. And Nginx had a couple ones in the recent history. I haven't heard of any Varnish security issues per se, at least not that I can remember. And Squid in the newer versions don't really have a whole lot of security problems either. But yeah, I see what you're getting at, and I think there's probably space here to come up with something that you sort of harden one of these proxies, pick one, and harden it, write some plugins or VCL or whatever, right, to come up with a more generic framework. I think that would be a useful extension for someone to do, honestly.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Okay, thank you for that.
Thank you. All right. Well, thank you, everyone.